Time to explain the Destiny Lore podcast, where friends come together to talk about Destiny lore. This is episode 17. I'm Mike. My pronouns are he, him. And with me, as usual, is my co-host, Kit.
Hi, I'm Kit. My pronouns are he, him, or they, them.
What's up, Kit?
Oh, not too much. You know, not too much to report. I feel like you're the one who has the stories from the weekend.
Contractually obligated to not share any.
Really? Okay.
In my NDA.
Okay. Mike's NDA. Okay. Well, that's fine.
No, I play with my band in person in front of people.
Yeah.
It was really weird. it was very good, but yeah, very weird feeling.
But good feeling.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was good. A lot of conflicting emotions happening.
Oh, really? Okay, that's fine.
But yeah, ultimately it was a good thing. And now I am here by sheer willpower alone.
That's right. Love to hear it. Love to do things based on just the utter grit. speaking of doing things based on utter grit and sheer willpower, while you were off playing drums in your band, I was running Last Wish, the raid in Destiny, where I had to learn to do a job in the vault encounter, where usually I just clear the ads.
About time.
No, it's not. It was awful.
Get a job, kid.
Oh, God. So I now know the difference.
Your head empty days are numbered.
I know they are. It's so awful because as I transition from being like one of the newer raiders to one of the more experienced raiders, just in general, from having like done more raids more times over time, now I'm starting to have to fill that role of like person who's done the raid a few times and so will now step up into the like more complicated role while like someone who's newer, you know, just adjust to the encounter. So after having literally never ever in my entire Destiny career paid even a shred of attention for someone explaining how the plate reading works in the vault encounter in Last Wish, I had to act.
Also knowing, shaking my head over here, knowing that I've definitely been one of those explainers in the past.
Yeah, why would I listen to it? I've never had to do it. It's like, oh good, time for me to fuck around while other people have to use their brain. So I had to actually, like, listen and, like, learn the shit this time. And it was fine. I eventually got there. I eventually competently read the plates and we, you know, finished the encounter.
Good.
But the interesting thing about it that I just want to, you know, mention briefly here is that, you know, you and I have been talking about learning and how your brain learns to play different games, you know, because we've been talking about fighting games recently and me trying to learn Guilty Gear Strive and kind of shooting myself in the foot with it. But one of the things I took away from that was that there's like a level of sort of information overload where your brain just kind of can't take in any more information. We're talking about the tutorial missions in Guilty Gear Strive, so in the fighting game. But I definitely had that experience a little bit with the raid of like, okay, well, I can let me learn how to do the plate reading part of this, and then let me figure out how to do the orb running part of this. So long story short, by like failing my way through it, I now have a very good understanding of like how the encounter works, what spawns control what actions control what, how the pacing works and the timing and everything. But goddamn, are there a lot of like little finicky bits. And I guess just the biggest thing was being patient with myself, I think, which was hard to do and is hard to do for me in a social setting of a raid, which is, you know, I often feel like, oh god, I don't know what I'm doing, and all the other five people here are waiting for me to figure it out, which is embarrassing and stressful for me, but also completely normal. And just, like, not all the information about that role or all the information about an encounter in a raid isn't necessarily going to sink in right away, and sometimes it'll just, sometimes it takes a few runs of a raid, but sometimes it just takes, like, doing your job for a while before you quite figure it out. And maybe not doing a good job at it and missing a detail. And I just, my point about all this is that that's all normal. And I just want to remind myself of that and anyone else of that who might put too much pressure on themselves to like be perfect at, you know, at a raid or an encounter or role in an encounter that they're doing for the first time. It doesn't always come right away. It really doesn't. And I didn't want to do it either. I was, like, pressed into service. Nobody else wanted to do it. And I was like, okay, you guys are going to regret this. But as I've been doing more, like, learning more roles and more raids, you know, actually learning how to do stuff in Crypt and Deepstone Crypt instead of just, like, fucking around with, you know, my guns and blah, blah, blah. Turns out you can learn things. That you didn't know how to do before, but maybe not all at once.
Yeah, and that's a very normal thing about learning anything new, is chunking.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that makes
that's
total sense. And I think you accurately pinpointed the consistent lesson across both your journey into the fighting game genre and your Last Wish encounter hieroglyphics reading, which is being patient with yourself.
I hate to be patient with myself.
Something I think in my experience of not just teaching raids but teaching in general is the teacher must also have a very deep well of patience and understanding for this phenomenon. And I think people set themselves up for failure both as the learner and as the teacher by not coming in prepared with that. It's a very different, you know, it's memed to death about like the know what to do LFG posts, but like there does need to be a setting of expectations of like, okay, if we have people doing new stuff they've never done before, we're not gonna be in and out of here in 20 minutes. Like reset your expectations accordingly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other thing I was thinking about is that almost every raid that I run is a teaching run about something, because even if everyone involved has done the raid. Even if everyone involved has done the raid last week or 2 weeks ago, they may be filling a role that they have not previously filled. And that is almost always the case, with the exception of, you know, people who are at a high level of raiding or a consistent, like, raid groups. So, you know, the same group of six people, but, like, you know, with the kind of pickup groups from a wider community, that is usually what I find myself doing. Almost always there's someone who has to learn. And so these things are important to think about for all of us. I also think there's, like, complex social dynamics that, like, I don't necessarily want to get into, because I'm sure some of it is, like, personal insecurity and some of it is, like, you know, they're the sort of interpersonal dynamics of a raid group of, you know, who is going to be the person who does the explaining. And just the reality that, like, different things will work for different people. So, like, you know, I like to do the most, after doing what you were talking about, you know, the detailed description of all the mechanics, I like to try to give the high level like summary at the end of it, like in case your eyes glazed over midway through the explanation, which is usually what happens to me. Not because the explanation is bad, just because there's a big overlap between people who love games like Destiny and people whose attention spans maybe don't work the same way as, you know, as other people. I'm thinking of like, you know, ADD and ADHD type conditions where your attention just like you can't focus on something in that way. So anyway, just stuff to be aware of. There's a lot of like, you know, people skill involved in rating, like soft skills, in addition to mechanical game skill. Yeah, just wanted to mention that and bring that up as an experience I had. I eventually did get it.
Group,
I mean,
bird type personality quiz before each run.
Yeah, I'm going to need everyone's sun, moon, and rising sign before we can get into this raid group. I need to know, like, you know, what your vibe, what your energy is going to be like.
What kind of adult learner are you?
Yeah, Please fill out this questionnaire of your about your compromise skills before we can raid. Okay, that's just all I had to say about that. Just interesting. Destiny miscellany, you know?
Thanks for sharing it.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
And you got 1KV, you fucker.
Now I never have to do it ever again. I learned how to do it only to never have to do it again because I got what I needed. Also, help your teammates. Like, if you have a good understanding of something and someone is like, oh, can you please do this, like, talk about it this way, and that's not easy for you, help your teammate. Like, if you know someone is having trouble knowing where to run in DSC, just be like, you can follow me. Like, come to me. We'll go together as a little team, you know? It's a team game.
Right.
Anyway, let's talk about the story of this team game a little bit.
Devolving our podcast into motivational teamwork poster memes.
Affirmations. Destiny 2 affirmations. It's like pretty screenshots with like...
teamwork.
You need it. We're going to talk about a couple of little topics here today.
I cracked myself up, sorry.
Okay, Mike.
It happens. It does. My own best audience.
I missed whatever funny joke you made. I guess it went over my head.
I was... oh, okay. No, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be 1,000 more. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, that's how it usually goes.
Sorry. You were segueing?
I was trying.
Please continue.
Oh, I will. Thank you. It's also a team effort on the podcast. So, we're just going to talk about a couple things.
Which one of us is John Stockton?
I don't know who that is. And I hope it does psychic damage to your old ass that I don't know who that is.
Ow.
Sorry, that was not nice. What's the man's name? You want me to Google him so I can laugh at your joke?
I told you there'd be 1,000 more. Don't worry about it.
He's a basketball player, and you thought I was going to know who that was? Oh, my God. Anyway, I was going to talk about the fucking video game. Get the fuck out of here.
I won't. I will not.
Okay, fine. So last week we had briefly talked about Here Always pieces, and Mike found a connection, or something that is probably about them. Do you want to talk about your little, your good find here?
Yeah, so you had brought them up last week, and I was reading back through the Vanguard lanyard-wearing Elixni relevant lore pieces that we talked about, just because. And since you had brought them up, a line from the Chroma Rush auto rifle jumped out to me that did not previously, which was, Elixni stood and held out what looked like a small model of the Traveler. It glowed as it floated in the Elixni's palm. Compensation, it said.
Mm.
And that stood out to me because of you bringing up the Here Always pieces, and as far as I know, we didn't get anything more on the Hero Always pieces other than the flavor text on them, which just said an old Elixni currency.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went and looked at the model of it in the, you know, the little inventory picture,
mm-hmm.
I feel like this line from Chroma Rush is describing a Hero Always piece.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And the reason I bring that up is, why are they called Hero Always pieces? And I think this line is providing the explanation with a heavy dose of irony.
Yes. I think you're right. I wonder what the value of these things is.
Like what? Like the exchange rate?
Yeah, like what the exchange rate is. Like if one Hero Always piece is actually the price, like was actually equivalent to like a bowl of ramen, like I kind of doubt it. Like, how many Hero Always pieces do you need to buy something? How many do you carry, you know? Do you have like a sack of marbles? Do you just have like three or four? Also, it's floating. Wait, hold on. It's also floating in the Elixni's palm. Like it glows and floats. Like it's not just a marble. It's like a marble that has some kind of a little, you know, technology or something in it.
Right.
And the fact that it's floating, I think, adds to the sense that it is a representation of the Traveler.
But Varix, you can turn them into Varix, and there is, like, a set amount that you turn in for stuff. So I guess that could kind of explain it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
See whatever that number is.
Yeah, those are high numbers, I think. Higher, like, you know, 50, 100, things like that. I don't know. Not sure how big they're supposed to be.
Fits in your palm, I guess.
Right, but if it's floating above your palm, it could be anywhere from, you know, tennis ball to marble. I mean, I think of them as marbles because that's what they remind me of. Like, very small, but...
I was zooming in on the model, and there's, like... it's like an orb inside an orb.
Oh, cool.
There's, like, a little glowing purple orb inside of, like, the casing. So.
Huh.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm picturing it. You ever God.
Yes,
you ever
Michael?
You ever see those balls?
Never.
You ever see those balls that like they're like metal and you like rotate them in your hand? Like you put two in your hand and you like rotate them around?
Fushigi?
I don't know what they're called. Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm picturing. Like, that size.
Gotcha. I think of them as smaller, but I don't think it's, like, confirmed one way or the other. Anyway, so, you know, just... I like thinking about those a lot as a thing. It's like the smallest little nub of lore, but I love to imagine things like that. Like, world flavor, world-building stuff.
Yeah.
It's my favorite stuff.
That's not explicitly spelled out.
Mm-hmm. It allows you a little bit of room for interpretation.
Right.
And
right.
Imagining and thinking about making, you know, authorial decisions in your own head about what things look like or act like in the game because of this lore delivery system that's largely, like, written text and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's what I always like about books versus movies is you get to make decisions in your head about things based on descriptions that leave you some room to imagine.
Yeah, I read a thing one time that stuck with me about world building efficiency in your writing. And it was like, you could either write a whole chapter about like the milling process of your world or the word paper. Like, oh, this character was like, oh, I had a piece of paper. With that one word, you're implying the whole process exists to have produced that piece of paper without writing it explicitly.
Mm-hmm.
That always stuck with me. Mm-hmm. It made me think of that.
Yeah, definitely.
I might be misremembering the example that they used. Maybe they said bread or something. Like,
doesn't matter.
The sentiment applies, though.
Well, it's also, I mean, I think it's very different from the Hero Always pieces. Like, I can't imagine them being mass-produced. Like, I can't imagine the Elixni having any kind of apparatus of mass production. So I imagine that these are, like, made by individual engineers. You know? I don't know. It's kind of interesting.
It does say they're old, though. So my thought was,
Yeah, but even if they're old and existing since, you know, before the Whirlwind, like, someone still made them, I think. Like, I don't think they were made on an assembly line, but doesn't seem right with the rest of what we know about Elixni building culture and engineering culture. I don't know. And which is really different from Glimmer, which just represents, like, raw materials to be transformed into something else, which is, like, the human currency, which I think comes into play with the Solstice gear stuff. Is why I mentioned it, like, different Elixni relationship, the relationship of Elixni and the relationship of humans being different to ownership of, you know, material objects and production of them and things like that.
Oh, so really, really quick before we get to that, sorry.
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
Issuing a correction to myself from last week. I put a note in the description of last week's episode, but as I was listening back to it after the fact, I was like, ah, shit. I said, in our discussion of Holiday and her potty mouth, I said Hawthorne, and I kept saying it, and I didn't catch myself until I was listening to it, and I, like, it was already out the door.
Oops, so, I guess me either.
I meant Holiday. I know it was Holiday. Anyway, there
I
you
get
go.
The, I get those two names backwards all the time.
Yeah, quick correction. Next thing we're going to talk about is the lore tabs on this year's Solstice armor. And I wanted to quickly just say, like, I've been thinking about this for a while. We kind of talked about it a little bit in our first couple episodes about, like, how we, the two of us, enjoy interacting with the lore. And I wanted to just say that, like, for anyone out there that might be listening that's like I am, like, I'm not some kind of brain genius, and I don't think that I am. Like, all I do is just read the stuff that the game gives me, and then, like, say whatever I think is interesting about it. I'm not, like, uncovering some deep mystery or secret or anything. I'm not bringing it to the podcast to be like, look at how smart we are by having uncovered this secret story. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. I mean, that's how I approach, like, literary criticism in general and always has been.
Like, I don't think I'm some kind of brain genius for just, like, reading the lore tab. So I just wanted to be like, I know that. I just wanted the listeners to know that I'm, like, aware of that.
You don't think you're better than anyone because you read more lore. And we're not doing this to be like, oh, we know more about the game because we read more lore. I feel like I'm a raccoon who, like, finds a little shiny thing and brings it back to you and is like, look at this. And you may be like, yeah, I already read that and saw that. And I'm like, that's cool. Let's put them together.
Yeah, like, if you're that kind of person, then you don't have to, like, sit here and listen to me talk about it or anything. Like, you're not obligated to do that. Like, and that's where I'm like, okay, now that we said that, like, I'm not gonna just recap the whole story for you because you could just read it. That's why I was like, I would rather focus on just the things I found interesting about it.
Yeah, we're a book club, not a summary podcast. Essentially.
And I guess I feel, maybe I feel that conflict sometimes because I'm like, well, the name of our podcast is like, we're explaining things, but it's more a pun than it is like a literal descriptor of what we're doing.
Yeah, I think that's true. I don't think that either of us have a goal to explain the lore necessarily.
Like, if people write in questions and they have questions that they want answered, I am so happy to do that. So I don't know if that made any sense, but I just felt like maybe it was worth saying.
I know what you mean.
Okay.
We don't think we're better than anyone is the kind of the crux of that.
No. Not at all. In
fact, some of us may even be insecure about our knowledge of the lore, but the point is kind of like, you can do it too, I guess, is the other thing. The other thing is, like, you don't have, there's nothing that, if you're interested in getting into the story of Destiny, but you're not sure where to start, you can just start. But the hardest part of doing anything is starting it. And also if you're not interested in reading through the lore, like if you're a person who is just grinding out objectives and isn't checking every piece of gear and finds that kind of tedious and a pain in the butt, we got you. We'll pull the interesting stuff for you and link it so you can go take a look at it later.
Right.
So, Solstice gear sets.
Yes.
Cute stories, more Elixni stuff, more Elixni culture stuff, which I was thrilled with. At first, it seemed kind of counterintuitive that Solstice gear, which is like a guardian holiday and definitely steeped in like guardian culture and tower culture, would have lore on it about Elixni culture. But I think it's a good choice. What another thing that could make this an easy to miss set of lore is the fact that it's three different stories on each of the three classes. So the Warlock set has stories about Ido telling parables to hatchlings. The Hunter set is about Mithrax and Ido's relationship as like a father and a daughter. The Titan set is written from Ido's perspective, taking notes in the last city about human culture, the culture of the last city. So that makes it even easier to miss, because if you're doing the Solstice grind on all three of your characters, even if you, you know, read lore on one set, you might forget to do it for the next one, as I did.
Right. If you did that, you could still go back to collections and see it there, thankfully, just in case someone didn't know that.
So what things stuck out to you from in here?
Some of the highlights for me, yeah, I liked that we got more of Ido, just in general.
She's a good character.
Yeah, I really like her. On the Celestine set, which is the Warlock set, we get Ido telling like fables to Elixni hatchlings, which is very cute. I just think it's funny that they're perhaps we might find them a little too violent for children, but I was amused by that.
I was thinking Aesop's Fables was where my head was at.
Right.
I liked seeing Ido filling this role of the scribe, and that a big part of that is like the cultural production of like passing down cultural values through storytelling to young Elixni, to hatchlings. That this is how that is done in Elixni culture, is like through a scribe telling these stories, and that's what that role is. And seeing Ido, who's like a very young scribe, like still doing it to the even younger hatchlings, was kind of warmed my heart. There are some lines in, I think it's in the Elixni quarter in the scans about, House Light being traditional in some ways. And one of the ways being that they have scribes that fulfill this role, which isn't always true of modern Elixni houses. So it's nice to kind of see such an intimate thing. It feels like a new dimension of our knowledge of the Elixni, that we're seeing this.
They're continuing to make good on we have people in roles other than warrior.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I appreciate that.
Totally.
Something on that Celestine set, I guess maybe it was obvious, but I didn't think about it, which was we heard before that Mithrax is not rationing ether in the house. And kind of going along with that is that Mithrax outlawed docking, and so there aren't any dreg. Like, there's no such thing as a dreg in House Light.
Right.
Which I thought was interesting. I suppose that might have been obvious, but I didn't make that connection until it got called out here.
Yeah. The only other thing I want to bring up from the Celestine set was about the story about the engineer. The engineer who was in a bad mood about doing something, about making a shank, and that translated to the shank malfunctioning. the kind of mystical sense of spirit or intention or energy that the Elixni seem to be aware of. That, you know, that your kind of your attitude towards something can affect the physical object that you're creating or making. I liked that. I thought that was neat and in line with, you know, what we know about Elixni culture. We can move on if you want to the Hunter set.
Yeah, this is the Illuminous set. For lack of a more clever name, I'm dubbing him Dadthrax.
Dadthrax.
Yeah, we're getting some father-daughter time.
Mm-hmm.
Which was very cute.
A good dad, in contrast to Clovis Bray, the series' yes. bad dad.
Yes. The things that jumped out to me here are we're getting more Elixni body language. One of them is he lifted all four of his palms toward her as a sign of respect. And then later on, Ido turns her palms downward in a show of fealty. I thought that was neat.
Mm-hmm.
I like getting this body language, because when I'm reading stuff like this, I tend to like to imagine it being acted out in my mind, and I like getting these little descriptions so that when I'm blocking the scene, I can, you know, include these motions as part of the acting that's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good. It goes in line with what we were talking about earlier, I think, with like the world building. In that you could explain, oh, the Irelis bow is when this is exactly, you know, what that is, or you can just throw in a little bit of body language here and there in your writing. Similar to information overload. I think the latter is better for like absorption of a culture, a fictional culture that you're writing about. Things that I liked about this, I liked a little bit of story about when Mithrax and Ido were living with the Awoken. And I really liked the line, let me just find it again, that Ido creeping on all sixes through the halls of the Dreaming City. I just think that's a good image, you know, of a small Elixni creeping through this. Maybe it's just because I just did Last Wish, and I was thinking a lot about the scale of that place and how Last Wish is built at a scale that Riven could comfortably move through it for most of that area, which makes it huge compared to most Guardians, most Elixni. So I was glad to see a little bit of that. It was a striking image. I would love to make a fan art. If only I could draw such a thing, but...
You can draw.
I can draw. That's true. Maybe I will. But, I just liked that their relationship and Mithrax having to, you know, watch her grow up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of sweet.
Yeah, I like their mutual respect for each other.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because you kind of wonder how much in Elixni society, familial structures work. It's not entirely clear, but, like, you know, we see Ido telling stories to hatchlings who seem to just kind of have a lot of, like, autonomy. I don't know if that's just, like, the Elixni in House Light being preoccupied with other things. But hatchlings are often described as just, like, running around without, like, anybody supervising them or anything like that, you know, just kind of getting up to things. So it seems like they might have kind of a communal approach to child rearing, but that, you know, in general, but that, you know, the relationship between Ido and Mithrax is, it's unclear whether that is typical of a parent-child relationship in Elixni culture, or whether this is, like, you know, something specific, like, that they're a little closer than most, because of the circumstances of Ido's birth, you know, or being found in a catch, not hatching, like, to an established group of Elixni. Hatchlings generally seem to be, like, a communal project.
Hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting thought.
Right?
Right.
And then the last one is the Titan set. My favorite, I think. It's a pretty funny little set.
Going from your last topic quick, the thing that I thought was interesting, getting Ido's point of view that she's telling, I assume Mithrax must have told her the story, and she is sharing it now with an additional step of removal to the hatchlings about an Elixni whose mother was a Ketch being found after a battle, which is what her story is. I guess I presume this to be her story. I don't know if we, you know,
I
don't know
if
that was made explicit.
No, it's heavily implied that it is her.
Yeah. That was on the truth. That's on the truth, exotic rocket launcher. But now in her relating the story to the hatchlings, we sort of get her view of it. Mm-hmm. And I just thought it was interesting that, that wording of it's something along the lines of her mother was a Ketch.
Mm-hmm.
As you said, Ido's close connection with the Awoken people, that's kind of echoing a line from Marisov from a long time ago, back in House of Wolves in D1. And this Ghost Fragment Fallen 4, where I think this was during the Reef Wars, Mara is in a showdown with the Kel of Wolves, and the Kel of Wolves is trying to question her authority because she doesn't have a royal lineage. And her rebuttal is, Starlight was my mother, and my father was the Dark.
That's a good line.
It's a great... I love that line. And that became a very famous line from the game. I see that echo there, and I think that's a neat connection.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of related, there's a story where it's said that on a Ketch, the Ketch being the giant Elixni space cruiser, scrap is a shared resource. The idea of hoarding scrap for some imagined purpose is strange indeed to the Elixni, the spider notwithstanding. So just that was interesting that we think of the Elixni that we've seen up to this point have, like...
They're always stealing scrap. That's what in a patrol that you're doing where you have to kill Elixni, it's always because they're stealing supplies or scrap or something. Stealing. Quote unquote. But this implies that maybe they wouldn't even think of it as that.
I hadn't thought about that. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, that, you know, that they may not have even, they may not even be, like, conceiving of it as stealing it, you know? But the second part of that line that you were talking about, or the next line in that story is that the engineer who takes the scrap learns an important lesson, which is to humans, control over a thing is often more valuable than the thing itself. So, like, having control over the scrap and ownership over the scrap is more important, even if the scrap is garbage. Like, that's important to humans. It's more important to them to have that than it is that the scrap, you know, be transformed into something and used for something. Totally different approach towards ownership of objects.
Right. And my initial thought was, it's interesting that even in seemingly in the Elixni houses that we've seen up to this point have been what we might think of as unjust hierarchies. Even within those structures, there was still this element of a communal resource.
Mm-hmm.
The Elixni are a land of contrast, is what I'm saying.
Yes. It's true.
But I'm like, oh, some communism popped up.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's true.
And of course, what's that?
I think it's true. The implication is that, you know, the Elixni might be a little more communist than humans in general here. It might be more of a norm in their society.
Yeah, which is interesting, tying it back to, like, the Here Always pieces and that being a currency. Like, I don't know how that jives. We don't know. I don't know enough to, like, answer that. I just think it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Especially that they call out Spider and be like, yeah, Spider's, like, all the way bought into capitalism.
Yeah. He definitely
like,
is.
Yeah. He is hoarding wealth.
Yeah, and that's weird.
Which other characters are going out of their way to
redistribute,
expropriate from him.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely, as we discussed last week.
Yes. Yes. Some other quick things. Ido is going around the last city taking notes about human behavior.
Yeah, because she's a good scribe.
I feel like this might be, maybe there was some truth to the human characters that we got that were freaked out by Elixni looking into their windows.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they weren't all forced hallucinations by the Endless Night.
Yeah.
Because we get one instance of Ido looking in on some humans going down on each other.
Yep.
And getting extremely freaked out when they notice that she's there taking notes about the whole thing.
Wait, is that what they're doing? I thought they were just making out. Their intake orifices.
I thought that was
their mouth parts.
Oh, yeah.
And then sometimes they use their mastication organs. And the mild digestive secretions is just their spits.
Right.
I don't think anybody is putting their mouth parts to anybody's genitals in here.
Oh, I thought that's what was being described.
No,
there.
I'm pretty sure she's just watching some teenagers making out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I thought it was a little bit, you know.
I did think to myself, like, this is kind of graphic
no,
for, like...
No.
I think this game is rated teen,
no,
maybe.
No, yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure where you got the... Yeah, no,
When she was like, oh, the more advanced techniques.
Yeah, like French, like French
oh.
kissing.
Right.
Also,
right. Okay.
Also, the mastication organs could be the teeth, but it could also be the tongue. I mean, just saying. Elixir
yeah.
mouth parts do not look like people mouth parts. She probably doesn't know
right.
what the fuck's going on in there.
Right. Okay, that makes more sense.
It does lead me to be like, how would a human and an Elixni kiss? Would it be weird for the Elixni? How do Elixnis kiss? I must know.
Do they?
I would love it if they did.
They have really sharp teeth.
So how do they like share intimacy? I don't know. I don't think we know, but I would like to know. I'm sure that AO3 has an answer to this that I could go look up. I am so incredibly sure that fanfiction has thought about this and would tell me exactly how Elixni share intimacy because of someone's self-insert ex-Varix fanfiction, you know?
Right.
Varix
right.
ex-Mithrax fanfiction. Which two...
Kid, are you writing the Varix
Which two Elixni characters would you ship if you had to ship two Elixni characters? I'm liking my Varix and Mithrax idea, personally.
Aethras needs a co-parent.
So who do you...
So we just slide Mithrax over there.
Aww! That would be really cute!
Yeah.
That'd be nice.
Varix, like, makes the connection.
Yeah, oh my god, Varix sets him up.
Exactly.
There is a... One of these Solstice pieces has Ido talking to Varix as an old scribe. filling that role and sort of passing knowledge to Ido and opening up notes that he hasn't opened in ages because, you know, there wasn't anyone fulfilling that traditional role of the scribe to share it with since the House Judgment stopped existing, really.
I thought that was really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was awesome.
A whole other side of the Varric's character we've never seen before.
Totally, yeah. So that's the Illuminous Cloak is the Hunter piece with it. And Ido's trying to understand how House Judgment isn't a ruling house if it's the one whose, like, word stands. And Varric is describing it as, you know, occupying a place where it's both above and below all other houses, and that its authority comes from humility. And it's like Ido recognizing that what she feels, you know, called to do, i.e. being a scribe, can be used in a whole other way than anything she'd considered before. And kind of learning this from Varric, something that she couldn't get from Mithrax, because he's not a scribe. And was never in House Judgment, right?
No.
Just knowledge from different houses, like houses have different specific knowledge and like philosophies, and that the few surviving members of those houses have things to like impart to the younger generation, which is, you know, this generation of Elixni in House Light seeming much more invested in like traditional Elixni culture than any previous one that we've known about.
I guess like there's some aspect of it that's like they have an opportunity that those before them didn't, which is like some modicum of security.
Mm-hmm. That allows them to do that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Made me think of like a person who's like can't point to a home world anymore. Mm-hmm. Like has no connection with whatever that was. Like just has to make up their own mythology in history.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, tying into what we were saying about cultural genocide.
Yep.
On a lighter note,
mm-hmm.
another one of Ido's adventures in the last city is observing human partying. Just people be getting shit-faced in the last city.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think of it as I was reading it, but I wonder if this was the party was when we blew up Quiria.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That would be funny. Her buddy getting tipsy, and Ido's there with her notepad.
Yeah, Ido's like, huh. Collective self-poisoning for which there's no parallel to Lexi society. Makes me a bunch of straight edge motherfuckers.
but they're also sitting around getting high on ether all the time.
Yeah.
So it's like not exactly true.
Does ether get them high?
Doesn't it?
I don't know. I think so.
Maybe I made that up because I'm thinking of like
hookah. It always makes me think of hookah.
Yeah.
Whatever,
yeah. Because
all the tubes and
that's what the. That's what the bar is in that Lost Sector, mm-hmm. and that's also, like, the little room when you first go into Spider's Palace. There's, like, a lounge area with, like, cushions set up and, like, little hookah pipes everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally.
Maybe that was just me filling that in.
Maybe, but I would take it.
But yeah, the line that I thought was really good was Ido saying, "I am reluctant to engage in human partying because I'm not sure an Elixni could survive it." I feel like that line it precedes somebody handing Ido a red cup and having her do a keg stand.
Like, here you go, Ido. She's like,
Like, the second after she writes it down.
Uh-huh. She's like...
Someone's like, your hand's empty.
Here you go.
Yeah.
Oh, Ido. She's great. She's a great character.
Yeah.
Good stuff in there. Should we wrap it up for the day?
Yeah, that's it for me this week.
All right. So if you have questions, thoughts, opinions, ideas, anything you'd like to share with us, we do have an email address that you can send those to. That email address is sometimetoexplain@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you, as always. Thank you so much for listening to our show.
If it's helpful, I know some people have said, like, are there any guidelines to the kind of email I should write in? The answer is no. You can write, as long as they're not spoilers, you can send us whatever you want.
Yeah, definitely.
If it's one sentence, if like it does not need to be any kind of MLA formatted formal thing.
Right. It doesn't, and it, you know, it also doesn't have to be like super deep thoughts or super like well-formed theories about things. You can just be like, oh, I heard this line in a strike. What do y'all think? Or like, oh, I had a question about, like, I have one that I want to hunt down from something somebody mentioned while I was running that last wish about the prophecy machine and reading the symbols and what last wish is all about lore-wise. So, you know, if you have, like, a nubbin of something and you want us to kind of chase it down for you or with you, that's fine. Guardian affirmations... or Guardian motivational posters. If you happen to be a Photoshopper and you want to send those over, that'd be good. Fan art of my Guardian. Fan art of my Guardian. Hey, fan art of my Guardian. I'm just saying. I should commission some art of my boy. Sometime I will do that. Yeah. Anything you'd like to plug there, Mike?
You can check out my Yu Yu Hakusho podcast that I do with our friend Andrew and their blog, which breaks down each episode. They're really good. That is at Watching the Spirit Realm.
Yes. And that's a Twitter, right? You can find them there.
Yes.
Awesome. Do you have a Twitter account that people should look at?
I do. I don't know if they should look at it, but I do have one. It's at McClubbin. And you can also find my website, which is michaelmccubbin.com. How about you, Kit? Where are you at online?
You can find me on Twitter at Kit_Boyote. That's like coyote, but with a B at the beginning.
As in Bravo.
As in Bravo. B as in Bravo. That's all I have to plug right now. No one liked my very funny, that's not true, not no one, but I put a very cute picture of my favorite Pokemon that I have in Pokemon Go, and nobody was that excited about it.
Who's that Pokemon?
It's Sylvia. A shiny Magmortar named Sylvia. She's my best friend Pokemon.
Oh. I don't know that one.
Yeah, it's like a bigger, bigger Magmar.
Oh, a Magmar.
Yeah,
okay.
It's like a bigger
one. I know that
one. Yeah, it's a bigger one of those.
I will go look at your post and see for myself.
Please do. Make sure you click that like button.
I'll think about it.
Okay. Okay.
So, thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed. Looking forward to hearing from you. And we will see you next time right here on Sometime to Explain.
Yay.
Bye.